Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Welcome to today's episode of New Cyber Frontier. Today we're going to hear a little bit about from the private sector, the Walter Fee, who is a retired military but works in the financial services industry as an information security analyst at Progressive Insurance. He said we can't talk too much about Progressive, but he can give you some generalized information about the industry. And we hear so much about government and so much about compliance in the government side and everything. This is a great offset to that knowledge base to hear a little bit from the private sector and how things might be done a little bit differently. And also education and training, what he sees coming into the workforce. But Walter, thanks for joining today. How are you?
Doing well. Good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, as the case may be.
Yeah, whatever it is. Whenever it is, they pick it up because the podcast media is nice because they can literally take it at their own pace. And we have some shows that keep getting numbers that are 6 months old. They're just word of mouth. Somebody sends it to a friend, and it just keeps growing. So, but that's the nice thing about these type of shows is it's you can absorb them at your own pace. So, Walter, give us a little bit about your background. How did you get to where you're at? What were your interests? What was little Walter Fee like? You know, things like that made you become where you're at and who you are today.
Sure. So I started out in the Air Force as an officer in the communications area. I was fortunate enough to work in an organization that had a lot of opportunity for computer security and electronics, things like that. And stayed in it. In the comm world in the Air Force, you kind of end up being a jack of all trades in some respects. I was fortunate to stay in the computer security realm for most of my career. That let me see a lot of the developments. When I started in 94, I remember seeing that all the Air Force webpage links were on one page and one screen, and that was it. Now, of course, that everyone has a webpage, everyone is on the web, things like that. So I've seen the security side grow from kind of a cottage industry to what we're seeing today, seeing the internet grow from, hey, someone actually has a web page to why don't they have a web page? I worked at a lot of different levels in the Air Force, from on the box up to strategy level and everywhere in between. When I retired, I looked for something different because I wanted to see something different. And I was fortunate enough to do some consulting work at first and then lucked into a very good opportunity at Progressive and been working there ever since and been very happy with it.
How long have you been with Progressive in the private sector?
Just about 4 years now.
Okay. All right. So that's of interest because, you work in information assurance. The insurance industry is very heavily regulated. So I'm sure a lot of things you do have to deal with making sure that those regulations are kept up and everything. Do you also, follow, where are you most concerned when it comes to information assurance in your industry? And what does that mean in the private sector versus what you saw when you were working with the government?
Most businesses and the government, we all fall under the same U.S. legal regulations, federal, state, and each of the states have their own ones that we work with. But we also have the payment card industry as well. So they have their own rules and regs as far as maintaining the security of credit card transactions, things like that. So like any other business that works in that area, we have to make sure that we're compliant with all of those rules and regs. But the compliance is only, I think most people understand, it's only the starting point. That is, the minimum. We have our own policies internally, the things that we do, areas that we focus on, and especially that's our starting line. I think a lot of other industries see it as well, is that that's your starting point. That's the minimum of what you should be doing, and there's a lot more that you need to be doing.
Okay. Well, let's take a break here from our sponsors. We'll be right back to talk to Walter some more.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
All right, welcome back. Talking to Walter Fee, who is with an information security analyst with an insurance company, Progressive Insurance. And we were looking to him, you know, for some of the things that he saw different from a long military career to now working in the public sector, because we have so many students with those questions of, okay, well, the military is very set on the requirements for coming to work for, you know, what position you have, what a certification they might want you to have. But the private sector is kind of open. They can make their own, you know, requirements, say that they follow, you know, strict, you have to have a certain certification, or just look for experience. So you had said you had a lot of thoughts in education and training and the workforce development. But, you know, first of all, I want to know, from your experience bringing people into the private sector, people coming through the door there at Progressive, what are your needs for bringing somebody into cybersecurity, and how do you evaluate them?
Having gone through the hiring process and learning that is, you know, after the military, where I didn't have to actually apply for a job, this is what your new job's going to be. You certainly are looking for experience in the area, and it varies. If you're looking for an advanced engineer, you're looking for that type of training. We certainly have the range of, you know, from entry level to advanced, and all sorts of opportunities and across the board. Certifications matter in across the industry, engaging at least the baseline of what that person knows. The next thing is, and I think a lot of companies will agree, is that it's making sure that you're the person coming in is the right person for that team, and the team is the right place for that person, because you want that person to be successful. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure they have the right expertise, the right personality, and the ability to work with other folks to meet whatever challenges you're being hired to handle. I think the industry right now, it's certainly enough publications that screening for technical or for security experience across the board from every level, entry level on up. Mm-hmm. And I would hope, I'd like to think that the college level and the training areas are starting to build into that pipeline. Some are, some aren't. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah. So what value do you put on certifications there where you're looking for people to come through the door, and maybe even which ones?
For me personally, the way, certain jobs, like if you're going for a DoD contractor, you have to have certain IA certifications. Even if you had a degree, in some cases the degree is not required, but the certification is, which is kind of ironic. For our value, some industry, it depends on the job. CISSP is the one that kind of gets you in the door for anything. Security Plus, as I understand, is actually getting more and more increased. Progressive, when I got hired, was, or at least from my job, and I've changed positions since I've been here, was more focused on the experience. But they wanted that kind of equivalent of, you know, expertise. If you're looking for a security type of job, I would expect something in the CISSP, the Security Plus, things like that would be of higher value. In the IT industry, you know, in the networking side, the Cisco certifications, the CCNAs, the ITILs for network management, things like that would certainly be of value. I guess it's all kind of tailored to the opening itself and where you want to go.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so definitely it seems like, I mean, a lot of weight is starting to come into the certificates. Do you think that's forever, or do you think, you know, that's because we have such a shortage in workforce that that's the quick way to get somebody up to speed, knowing that they can do the job, as, you know, if they have the cert in that area that only takes a couple months to get, maybe that they're ready to go. So it's a factor of, you know, kind of a workforce that's not developed very well.
I think you're going to see it stay for a fair amount of time, only because, as you were saying, it's an indicator of the baseline experience. You know what that person's basic skills are. The CISSP has been described as a mile wide and inch deep, and that's great. If you had something more in-depth, like a certified ethical hacker or incident handler or something like that, that helps as well. It's a little more deep in one area and not so much in another. I think you're going to see that certification stick around. Everyone kind of knows what a bachelor of science degree in something is, but it can be, it varies from school to school. When I went to St. Joe's University in Philadelphia, it was very heavily focused on programming, and that was the nature of the beast at the time. You go to UCCS right now, or CTU, or pick a college, the focus on that degree requirement is going to be, it's going to vary, and your electives will vary because based on the interest of the student.
Okay. So what, when you're looking at, now we had talked before that you had a lot of input on, you know, what should be being taught that you need in the industry. What types of things would you recommend if, you know, hey, this is what I'm seeing people come in with, this is the degrees, this is the training, and they're missing, boom, boom, these skill sets. How would you recommend that those, that industry or that the education restructures or adds or augments to meet what you're seeing the need in your industry?
I would recommend that right now, computer security in a lot of curriculums is not a requirement. It's an elective. I don't see any way you can do any part of work in the IT world without computer security training in some way, shape, or form. Even if it's just the class and the degree, I would have to, if I was king for the day, I would make computer security 101 as a requirement for a college degree. I just don't see how you can work in this world without having that knowledge. It factors in everything from coding to network operations to you pick a subject. Data analytics, good example, the Hadoop technology is about 10 years old or so. The first ones that came out was in like 06. Mm-hmm. Crunches massive amounts of numbers, massive amounts of data, and the first versions that were on the street were wide open. Anyone could do anything, run any process, and see any bit of data in that application. Now, this wasn't 1995. This was 2006, where people should know better. They've since, you know, fixed that and put in access control, but we can't keep, you know, recreating these problems. Mm-hmm. You don't understand the nature of security when you're doing anything. There's just no way. And that's just for the computer science focused crowd. I would argue that a technology 101 requirement is got to be part of pretty much any degree. You hear the same complaint from kids. Okay, when am I going to use bio? When am I going to use chemistry? When am I going to use calculus? Well, you can have that debate along the way, but there is no way you can you have a job in any kind of industry where you're not using computer systems. I would argue that a technology 101 course should be part of any college degree with some touch on at least on IT security. This is why this matters.
Yeah. You know, I had another guest
say
from.
That's what I would do.
Yeah, I had another guest from the military say that they when analyzing their proposals coming in for work, if the company is an IT company that doesn't focus on cybersecurity and doesn't have, here's how we're going to handle cybersecurity at the top of their proposal, they throw them out. They don't even entertain a company that's just a standalone IT company or doesn't offer cybersecurity as the top priority. And it sounds like you're echoing that on the commercial side, that this has to be in everybody's curriculum, everybody's wheelhouse, and everybody has to learn it. And it can't be just a concentration, if you opt it, on your other degree.
Absolutely. And if you're going to go to some company for whatever service, a bank, insurance, I don't care, your car company, if they don't emphasize or let you know, here's how we're going to keep your stuff from being lost,
uh-huh,
then you need to find someone else. The dentist, you know, anything like that. Medical records are a big target for the hackers, not only because of the identity theft, but because then they can get illicit drugs out of it.
Uh-huh.
If they're not providing that security level, you don't want to be part of it.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break and hear from our sponsors. Be right back to talk to Walter Fee some more.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Over 3 million data breaches happen every single day. That's over 2,000 records being compromised every minute. So often, we focus on securing web data access. But what if the attackers are already inside, having gained direct access to your storage through data management software? When it comes to communications that go directly into your storage devices, make SNIA your first line of protection. SNIA's conformance testing limits outdated communications that are known to be used by attackers. It works continuously behind the background to make sure your storage is protected. To find out if your data is truly secure, visit our website at www.snia.org/cybertest.
All right, welcome back. We are talking to Walter Fee, who is a financial services industry information security analyst. And Walter, we were talking about things missing from the education, things that you recommended that you're seeing in your area that people might need to have or definitely need to have. And you have mentioned when we talked before about doing a lot of work with the Cyber Patriots and the younger demographic of high school kids coming up through. And I am curious what your thoughts are on, you know, that level and how those, you know, what the needs are and what you're seeing from the private sector in support of or in working with those kids that come out of high school into your area and your company.
Yeah, high school students are massive users of IT, social media, iPads, iPhones, you know, pick it up, technology, and they're using it. And we're seeing a growing appreciation of that and development of that of the high school students who are very interested in the technology, interested in the capabilities and what it can do. And that's awesome. I think the more you can push this information down into the lower, to the earlier levels of training,
mm-hmm,
so much the better. A good example of my high school in Philadelphia has since closed due to population shifts, but before it did, it was offering a CCNA training option for students currently enrolled. I think that was awesome. Imagine coming out of high school where you're able to make 30 to 50 bucks an hour or more as your part-time job. It just demonstrates the amazing potential for high school students of what the things they can do. The Cyber Patriot is an outstanding opportunity where they get to see the options and what they can do and how they can do it. We're only limited at that point to our imagination. If we're already letting high school students get dual credit for classes from community colleges and others, there's no reason we can't be doing some of the computer security stuff down at that level as well.
Yeah, and you know, we were talking to a guest just yesterday that does a lot in K-12 education with cybersecurity, and talking about in kindergarten, kids picking up and programming little robots And they're starting to begin them early. And I think, you know, that's definitely a necessity in our age where no matter, like you said, no matter what job you do, no matter what industry you're in, you're going to have a computer sitting in front of you that interfaces you to that industry's work.
Yep. And we're seeing it, for good or for bad, the amount of it is depends on the resourcing per school. Like you were mentioning with the kindergarten, I have two daughters in elementary school, and they have iPads that they use every day.
Uh-huh.
And that's awesome. They teach them basic computer skills 101 in the first and second grade. I think that's outstanding. And for good or for bad, it's reality. You have to have that anymore.
Yeah. Okay, on another area, you had mentioned that you were also a part of some industry threat boards and working heavily with software industry threats. And that's an interesting topic because, I've found that the security development and software development for security over the last couple of years has been almost at a standstill. But talk to us about, or tell us first of all, what threat boards, what boards you're on, and then what you are seeing in the security industry from that interface with that work you do.
The financial services, ISAC, has different area meetings. So I sit in on those every couple of weeks. I'm on distribution lists for different other boards as well. It's more about sending information out about the latest threats and what's going on. And there are a few others that come up. Some of the vendors that we work with will invite us to different information topics, things like that. So I see a different variety from the industry, and some have government reps as well. So I get a pretty good feed, and it's enlightening to see who's doing what and see who's being affected by what.
Okay. And what do you see as the trends?
We've gone past the point where it's the operating system as the target mm-hmm. for the most part. The operating system vendors, the Microsofts, the Linuxes, the Apple folks, I've gotten pretty good at finding internal threats on the operating system itself. It's not, it's a never-ending thing, but they've gotten pretty good at that, at least recognizing how to program it. What I see now, at least in my two-cent opinion, is that it has gone to the applications that as the targets, either the web-facing front ends or the Office tools or the PDFs or the Adobe Acrobats. And for good or for bad, the vector that still works to deliver that initial payload is still phishing. It's recognizable. We have automated ways to find it, but it only takes one person to click on a link, one new thing that gets by the first wave of the antivirus detection or malware detection, and they have a vector in. And usually they're not going after the operating system. They're going after applications. It could be the web front ends. It could be the Office tools, like I said. But it's more focused on applications than anything else.
Mm-hmm. So in a very large application development. I know where you work. I know a lot of people that have been in there and through the doors there at the company. Security and software development is a big piece of what you do. Is there anything from a development standpoint, from an organizational or testing standpoint, that you think, hey, this is a direction that needs addressed. This is some things we need to change, just some holes or some gaps in the industry?
It's vigilance. Including that, kind of going back to the conversation we were having earlier, it's you have to have that mindset in a developer that I don't have to just make sure that it handles the data to do the job. It has to handle the data securely.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not doing that, if you're not planning for that, that's where your mistake is. When the first web applications, like web forms, were being put out on the internet, I saw this years ago. If you didn't bounds check the variable field to so that it would handle things that weren't expected,
mm-hmm.
was usually the front, the way into the buffer overflow or something like that. And that was back when I was in the Air Force. I saw that in the industry where someone put out a form, and first thing someone did was, well, it's expecting me to put in a word like my name. What happens if I put in 500 numbers? And if it's not bounds checked the right way, if it's not coded the right way, you blow up the application, and that, okay, maybe it just crashes, but maybe it gives you a way in.
Mm-hmm.
Adversaries will do that. I don't care what application it is. You have to plan for that. And to do that, you have to, you know, I don't have an insight into what our developers use for security tools. I know that, you know, we work on it, and I know I don't have an industry sense of what some of the tools are, but there are the ones out there, and you have to test it. You have to test it on a non-production network,
mm-hmm.
that you can beat the daylights out of it, and look for, you know, if nothing else, someone typing in the wrong thing. Instead of a letter, they typed in a number. Mm-hmm. What happens?
Okay. So just kind of in, you know, pulling together here in closing, do you have any call to action or things you need to get out to our listeners that, you know, would be beneficial either for you or for organizations you work for? I know ISC Squared was one of the ones you were part of. But any information you'd like to get out?
At this point, with the growth of information, there's too much data. So I would expect that we're going to see things like automation and aggregation of information. I also expect kind of all that information coming in, something's got to manage it. And I would expect that's probably the developing wave. I already know it is.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also expect a legal overhaul. The online bullying, electronic crimes, cloud operations, things like that are forcing a review of our laws right now. The Microsoft case that's up at the Supreme Court is going to be very interesting no matter what the result is.
Mm-hmm.
Those are familiar. The government served a warrant for Microsoft because they wanted information about some person.
Mm-hmm.
Some of their email was stored on a server in the U.S. Some was stored in Ireland. So they served a warrant, and Microsoft's position was, well, it's physically stored over there, even if it's in a cloud box. So our laws just haven't kept up with that. So
yeah.
I would expect you're going to see a legal overhaul affecting the IT world of how we're going to do things. For me, I would say vigilance, maintaining the training, maintaining currency it does not stop. You have to stay on it. Internet working, that you never know enough. So internet working with your counterparts is always a good thing. To that end, for the local, to the Colorado Springs folks, our chapter meets once a month. Just Google Pikes Peak ISC Squared, and you'll see people from the local area and get to network with them. Anyone's more than welcome. I would expect that the biggest challenge right now is trying to stay ahead of the curve. And the only way to do that is communicating with your peers about what's going on.
Uh-huh. And definitely stay tuned and listen in to more of our shows. We bring in experts from all over the community, different topics, but basically expanding awareness and knowledge in the cybersecurity area. Thanks for joining New Cyber Frontier today. And thank you, Walter, for coming on the show and participating.
My pleasure.
All right. You have a great day. Bye. The views or opinions expressed during this podcast are not those of Colorado Technical University.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.